you're planning for a great retirement, there might be one thing missing that could make a big difference: adventure. I'm Joe Casey, and this is the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. And I think you'll really enjoy today's conversation with Caroline Paul. I first became aware of her in 2016 and 2017 when I heard her interviewed on the Tim Ferriss Show, and those are lengthy, in-depth conversations. And I was immediately struck by her story, graduating from Stanford and becoming a firefighter in the San Francisco Fire Department, where she stayed for 14 years. But Caroline Paul has always filled her life with adventure, from mountain biking in the Bolivian Andes to pitching a tent mid-blizzard on Denali. She's never been a stranger to the exhilaration the outdoors can hold. Yet through it all, she's long wondered, why aren't women like men encouraged to keep adventuring into old age? Her new book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age, is her quest to understand not just how to live a dynamic life in a changing body, but why we must. Caroline Paul is also the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Gutsy Girl, Escapades for Your Life of Epic Adventure, and Lost Cat, a true story of love, desperation, and GPS technology, which has been translated into 15 languages. She is also the author of the memoir, Fighting Fire, the middle grade book, You Are Mighty, A Guide to Changing the World, and the novel East Wind Rain. Her TED Talk, To Raise Brave Girls, Encourage Adventure, has been viewed over 2 million times. A longtime member of the Writer's Grotto, she lives in San Francisco. And just a personal observation, her new book is geared toward women, but I will tell you, I found it to be a great read with a lot of useful information, as well as her other work that can be useful if you have grandchildren or children that might benefit from some of her insights. Caroline, thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much, Joe.
So I once heard you describe adventure as the ability to break outside what you normally do. How can outdoor adventures enhance later life?
Oh, I mean, everything about outdoor adventure hits sort of all the pillars that we need for fulfilling aging, and kind of all in one fell swoop. So I really realized during the research of this book that we need to have community as we age. We need to have purpose as we age. We need to have novelty. And of course, there's health. And then the final one, which is sort of lesser known, is the positive mindset about our own aging. And if you go outside, you actually sort of in one fell swoop hit all of those.
And so in your book, the new book, there are so many fascinating profiles in each chapter. And I was wondering if you could share one story that illustrates the challenges that older women face and those benefits of outdoor adventures.
I could talk about my own mom. Is that all right? Yeah. I interviewed my mom. I didn't really want to talk to people I knew because it's just stressful. But my mom actually had become this positive subliminal message for my own aging. As women age, we get a lot of very toxic messaging about our aging. I'm sure men get their own negative messaging about aging, but I don't think it's quite the same. I mean, for us, we're really told on overtly and covertly that our future is we're going to look forward to fading looks and fading relevance, breaking bones, cognitive decline. We're going to be boring. And yet for me, I saw my own mom blossom as she aged. And in particular, when she was 62, she picked up a bicycle. And so when I wrote this book, I really wanted to talk to her because I realized how much she had influenced my own view of my own aging, which is that positive mindset that I was talking about. And you know, when she went biking, she didn't have an outdoor life at all. She simply was recovering from heartbreak. She had moved to a new town and she wanted a distraction. She thought it'd be a good way to meet new people. So she joined this group of bicyclists made up of 60, 70, and 80-year-olds and started hitting the back roads. And she, to her own surprise, loved it. And she really changed over those years. The next 20 years were filled with adventure and exhilaration and physical vitality, all these things that basically she had been told and she thought of herself that weren't due her in her older age.
And I remember in the book, you talked about her upbringing. She was not encouraged to be adventurous or courageous. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about her upbringing and how that affected how she raised you and your sister.
Yeah, actually, I mean, she was actually told not to do any of those things. It wasn't even that she was sort of not given the opportunity. She was actively warned by her own mom to be super cautious. Not only was it unladylike at that time, but there was a sense that everything was dangerous and, you know, you were going to hurt yourself. And so my mom did not have an outdoor life. And as a result, she felt that that was one of the reasons that she didn't have a really good social life growing up. So we were lucky in that even though neither of my parents were outdoorsy, they wanted to expose us to outdoor activities. But again, like it wasn't because they wanted to make us stronger, braver, more resilient, all those characteristics that we talk about now. I don't think that was part of the parenting vocabulary. Like they wanted to get us out of the house. And they also simply just wanted to be well-rounded people. So we did skateboard and swim and ski and we got on our bikes and we were told, get on your bikes and see you when it's dark. So my mom had, you know, just none of this. She didn't have that foundation that she offered us. So when she was 60 and picked up her bike, I think that it just opened up. When you do that, when you upend what you think you're capable of, that doesn't just allow you to have this really cool experience in that venue, in this case, bicycling, kind of opens up your whole life and you start doing other things. It's really generative.
Makes sense. And just a side comment that back in those days in New England, free range parenting was the default. See you at dinner time.
Oh, I know. And it was great. And it's so funny that my peers who were free range, feral parent, or had a feral childhood, they themselves are not parenting their own kids that way.
So it was interesting to read your book because I was initially struck by the profiles of older women doing things like base jumping, BMX racing, scuba diving, very adventurous things. But then I read these stories about how other women describe things like bird watching, boogie boarding, and walking. And that drove home to me that you're really writing about the mindset. What's the underlying mindset that's key regardless of the activity?
So when I started this book, I wanted to be available to everybody of all women, all financial backgrounds, health circumstances, race, outdoor background. And so I was determined not to just do the adventures that look like they might want to kill you, which is kind of the way I had lived my life as a paraglider, as a whitewater rafter. I do fly experimental planes. I was a firefighter for many years. I had this definition of adventure as something that had to have high adrenaline, questionable decisions, risky, uncertainty, all that. But I wanted to make sure that people went outside because I saw how medicinal, I learned actually how medicinal through research it was to simply be outside. I mean, it's good to exercise in a gym, but being outside is just a whole different story. And there's so many studies on that. So I wanted to make sure that I included things like hiking/walking and bird watching. And I'll be honest, I approached it with a little bit inside my head, like that's not really an adventure, but I'm going to do it because it still have a lot of the hallmarks that are important for fulfilling aging that I was talking about. And then, so for instance, I went bird watching with Virginia Rose in Texas, who started a organization called Birdability, where she brings people outside with disabilities. And she herself is in a wheelchair. She's 64 and fell off a horse when she was 14. And as she told me, hey, Caroline, if you're lucky, you will be where I am now at some point in your own life. You know, we're all going to have some physical decline, but she didn't believe that that should be a reason not to go outside. And she was a living example of that. So I went on what was called a birdathon with her. And I realized and I'd never birded before. I love looking at birds as a pilot and a surfer. I look at birds all around me, but I did not think it was going to be boring, I'll be honest. And instead, I realized that it had all the hallmarks of adventure. It had all the attributes of an adventure. So there was the quest for the bird. There was the anticipation, there was the exhilaration, there was the physical vitality. I mean, we walked/wheeled 6 miles. We were outside, there was the uncertainty. It was an adventure. So I really began to realize that it's adventure will be different for everybody, but it's available to all of us. As long as we're pushing our comfort zones, finding vitality, exhilaration, physical exertion of some sort, we're on an adventure.
And in reading your book, you felt like you were there alongside you as you were profiling these people and experiencing things with them. And I'm wondering, though, what did you learn about yourself in writing this book?
Well, one of the biggest things was that I had a very narrow and myopic view of adventure, and I needed to learn a little humility, which I did, because the gifts these outdoor activities, like walking with Dot Fisher Smith, who was 93 at the time, she wanted to hike with me, but I was pretty intimidated because I do have like a bad knees from being a firefighter, and I said to her, could you just do a little flat walk about 3 miles? And she thought, you look robust. What is your problem? I mean, she really kind of schooled me a little, but she took me on a walk. She acquiesced and took me on what was really just a walk in a park in a suburban town. And what she showed me that that chapter was supposed to be about physical movement, how important it was. You know, again, I went into each chapter or each adventure with a pretty clear idea of how I was going to slot that adventure into fulfilling aging, came out with a completely different one as well. And what Dot showed me is not only did I see just how medicinal nature was, because I ended up doing a lot of research on, okay, walking on a treadmill is good, but going outside is so much better for our well-being, which is more holistic view of health, because of the something as complicated as the fractal aspect of nature and the fractal construction of our eyes means that when we are in nature absorbing the information, our brains are much more at rest, which makes us cognitively sharper. And the fact that birdsong is really good for us. So I had to expand my idea of what movement was. As we age, it'd be great if it was in the outdoors. But what Dot showed me is that everywhere she went, she was just stopping to look at the apples on the trees or the color of that, or look at that bird over there. And so it was more than just a walk. We paid a ton of attention as we walked.
So it becomes a very mindful experience as well.
Exactly.
Although I'm imagining a lot of things that you've done, you have to be pretty mindful while you're doing them as well.
Yeah, or freaked out.
Yes.
I mean, maybe, yes. I mean, I think that's one reason why I really love adventure, is because it does ask you to focus in ways that maybe we don't have to in our daily lives, where we're often on autopilot.
So you talked about your mother before, and I was just curious, what was the most surprising thing you learned from her about what she's been doing in later life?
She did not articulate this, but what I really saw was that biking, as I said, upended her own expectations of what she could and could not do. And when I looked deeper into that, it went really back to that positive mindset that I was mentioning before. And there's some really startling science on the fact that the way we look at our own aging predicts the way we will age. And that means that if you have a negative outlook on your own aging, you think it's going to be a time of diminution and a narrowing of your life and physical illness, you in fact will experience cardiac arrest earlier, cognitive decline earlier. And the opposite is true. If you have an optimistic, open, exploratory vision of your own aging, indeed, that's the way you'll age. And the science shows that you will live 7 years longer. So my mom was living that out. She was expanding her life by simply getting on a bike.
There's a fascinating part of the book about awe. And you write, "And something else strikes me. Could this be what really has been motivating my outdoor quests these past few years? Instead of adrenaline, have I unwittingly been seeking awe?" So tell us a little bit more about that, and how can we experience more of that awe?
I found a video by this woman whose name is Cynthia Hicks. She was 71, and she was walking on the wing of a biplane in midair. And I thought, I have to talk to this woman for my book. And I called her and she explained that, first of all, that as she aged, she had had cancer. So a lot of her old adventures, she was one of the few women that had been adventuring almost her whole life. A lot of the women I met and talked to found outdoor adventure later in life. But she had done it all her whole life. And as she experienced some health issues in her 60s, she had to kind of pare away her adventures. And she was fine about it. She's like, nope, I had 26 years of snowboarding. I feel great about it. But what she would do is when she went on her travels around the country, she would type in something fun to do here. And she would go on some adventure, some mini adventure. And one thing she came upon was wing walking. And wing walking is not something we do these days. It comes from the old barnstorming days in the 20s where people used to fly biplanes literally through barns as a barnstormer. And they'd go from town to town doing tricks on this new machine called the airplane. And one of the things they did is they had people walk on their wing. And they would do it from wing to wing, transferring in midair, just these crazy things. Well, that faded, probably for good reason. But there is one place here in the United States that does teach wing walking. You're not really a wing walker. You simply experience wing walking, kind of. And I wanted to talk to Cynthia because I thought, wow, what does one really mind-expanding outdoor adventure do for us if you just do it once? Is that good? Because it seemed like it still would be. And so I interviewed her and she said, Caroline, you wouldn't believe the courage that I felt when I got up from the cockpit and climbed onto the wing. And I thought, oh, well, I have to go now and write about that courage. Therefore, I have to go experience wing walking. And I'll tell you, I was not really that happy about it. I was reluctant. I am a pilot. I didn't want to get out of a perfectly good cockpit. But I went because I thought courage is definitely something we need as we age. So I am go and we practice wing walking on the ground. And then we get in the plane one by one and we take off. And at 3,000 feet, the wing waggles and you are to get up from the cockpit and climb onto the wing and make your way to the king post in the middle and attach yourself. It's not really walking, by the way. It's like crawling, slithering, praying. It's terrifying. It's not terrifying actually, because it's so bizarre. And at 3,000 feet, I got up reluctantly and made my way to the center post and belted myself in, still in my head, like, God, the things I do for books, book writing. And then the pilot started to do the loops, the barrel rolls and the hammerheads with me attached on the top of the wing. And Joe, it was amazing. It was amazing. And it's something you can't quite grasp at the time because there's nothing that resembles it in your normal life. So your brain, your neural system kind of blows up, which of course is really good for you because it's an opportunity to be open to other things. I mean, the science shows that. And I got down back on the ground and I thought, what was that? It wasn't adrenaline. There was adrenaline, but that wasn't the actual experience. And what I found was that what I was experiencing was awe. And by the time I handed my book in, there had been other books about it, but I did not know much about it at all when I was writing it. And I realized that, so awe is what you experience in the face of something bigger than you. And it's mostly considered a religious word most of the time, but we're bringing it more into our vocabulary. But awe is something obviously that the outdoors often inspires. And turns out it's really good for you. They've shown that, well, they did a study here in San Francisco where they asked people, older people, 60 to 80, to take walks. But during those walks, to look at everything with what they called childlike wonder. They called them awe walks. And then they sent out another control group. Those people just walk like we normally walk, which is, you know, thinking about our to-do lists and worrying about things and looking at our phone. And they found that the people who were on the awe walks, looking around them with childlike wonder, just changed markedly physiologically. Their immune systems were bolstered. Their anxiety went down. They did tests to show they felt more compassion. They've felt physically better. And there are all these metrics that people you can look into that are astonishing. And it turns out that awe is really good for us and we should be seeking it more. And so, of course, you don't have to wing walk. Wing walking makes awe easier, I will say. It just happens. It blows your brain. But you can go outside and just practice awe by looking at things with that deep attention and wonderment.
So one thing I was in awe of was your experiment in learning to fly a gyrocopter. So tell us about what was that like? Because you mentioned you've been a pilot for years, decades. What was it like to learn something new like that?
Well, I wanted to look into people learning something new at a later age because I asked around and most people had not. As we get to a certain age, we stop trying new things, partly because we know what we like and there's good to that. But in fact, novelty is really important for our brain as we age to stave off all the cognitive decline that we're so worried about, as well as for our emotional well-being, of course, and giving our lives purpose and spark. And so I thought, well, I think I'm going to go learn to fly a gyrocopter. And I am a pilot and I do fly experimental planes, but the gyro is different in that the controls are exactly opposite to anything I'd ever flown before. And that's a real challenge. Yeah. So, and I also went thinking, oh, I'm not going to be as good at this. And in fact, my instructor, who turned out to be a 55-year-old woman, very few women fly experimental planes, but I found Britta Penka in Arizona. And she said to me, oh, Caroline, you know, women of your age actually make really good pilots because at this age, you know, you're in a new phase in your life. The kids are gone. You're sort of, you know where you are in your career. And also your hormones have changed. So those extreme caregiving hormones are changing. And now they're focusing, frankly, and this has been shown scientifically, that our perspective has changed away from taking care of everybody else to starting to really take care of ourselves, which makes us really interesting people. This isn't a bad, selfish thing. We have just sort of, we're still able to connect and be empathic, but there's a change. So she said, you will make a great student. And in fact, what I learned was that when you're older and you no longer have all the insecurities of youth, the need to be like, look good, not be the best, but look like you're the best, those have all fallen away. I really wanted to learn how to fly a gyrocopter well. Whereas before, when I first learned to fly, of course I wanted to learn, but I also felt I had so much to prove. And there's just a lot tangled in there. And so it turned out that I think I was an even better student. I mean, I'm always pretty average, but the learning process was so much more joyful for me.
And you write in the book too about the value of experience at this age and how that can be leveraged in different ways.
Yeah. I mean, what I liked about Britta, as I said, I'm not going to be able to learn as well because my brain isn't as good. She goes, no, your brain is really good. It's just full up with experience. It's got so much knowledge in it. That's the problem. And that was a great way to look at it, really.
So one thing I want to ask you about is adaptation. So as we get older, we have to adapt. You mentioned knee problems. I've got a broken hip that I had to recover from. We all have to make some shifts. What did you learn about adaptation in the different women you profiled?
You know, that they were really good at it, for one. I mean, that they approach their activities with an openness and an understanding of their own possible limitations without less judgment, I think. And that adventure for them, they were really clear, was not about the ability to say, look at me, I'm so rad, I was on the wing of a plane. That it's not about what you're doing, it's how you're doing it. Is it giving you what I found in birdwatching? Exhilaration, exploration. Is it pushing your comfort zone a little? You're feeling physically vital. And so I went, for instance, boogie boarding with a group of women down in San Diego. And I talked to Lorraine Voigt, who was 62, and she had picked up boogie boarding 2 years earlier. And she had no connection to an outdoor life before that. But it was a pandemic. She was on the beach. She saw these women playing in the waves, and they looked like they were having so much fun. She didn't even like, she lived in San Diego, but she just had no affinity even for the ocean. But she went in and tried it and she was immediately hooked. And there were a lot of reasons for that. I mean, it was the physical vitality of being in the waves. And part of it was just the pure play aspect. As adults, we really forget that play is really important in our lives. And there's a lot of different, you can look into the different kinds of play through the eyes of science. But the one I really like is called rough and tumble play, which is basically what boogie boarding is. You get kind of thrown about, you're laughing with other people. I mean, it's what dogs do in the dog park. And it's a very bonding, it's dogs do it. It looks like they're fighting. They're not. They're playing, and it's a way for them to bond, test limits, and gain trust. And it's the same with boogie boarding. I think women, we're not taught to be unruly like that. And so I think this really opened up an aspect of the women in the water that was eye-opening. And Lorraine herself told me, boogie boarding changed my life, which is a really big statement. But like my mom, I think what she was trying to tell me is, look, I had these limited ideas of myself and I went boogie boarding and they blew up all those beliefs in ways that now my life is so much more open. And she was exploring other things. She told me she was more social. She was scared of heights. So she was actually trying to get over that by pushing herself. Her life had just changed by that one simple activity of play. And the other thing that she told me that was interesting to me is that she had loved boogie boarding and decided she would even try to do it on her own. And when she did it, it was still great, but it just didn't have that zing when she was with her boogie boarding friends. They're called the Wave Catchers. And she told me that it was the community aspect that maybe surprised her the most, how much it fed her. And it actually, honestly, the community aspect of outdoor adventure is what also surprised me the most, because I had always pursued these sort of individual activities like paragliding, like skateboarding. But in fact, I was doing it in community all the time.
You mentioned scared, and I'm wondering your thoughts on fear and anxiety.
Well, fear for women is something that we are pretty comfortable with. Like, we're taught to be afraid. It's an emotion that we're offered. Whereas I think men are really told to funnel their reactions in a situation towards bravery, which I have always admired and I've seen in my fellow firefighters, and I practice myself. And I believe that bravery is the sort of forward-facing emotion that we should have. But that also includes fear. Like, fear is there and fear is there, but it's more like a red flag, like, hey, or a little tap on the shoulder, like, hey, a little fear here. So let's take a little more, you know, let's be a little more cautious. Let's see what's going on. But it's not a reason not to do it. And I think women choose not to do things because they feel fear, and it's, they've been told that fear is the reason not to do something. Men have not been told that, by the way. So they tend to have so much, I think, so many more experiences. So, and the other thing is that it's really important to distinguish the difference between fear and exhilaration, because they feel so similar, and women have a hard time understanding the nuances. And so, you know, the sort of racing heart, the sweat, the prickles on the neck. Yeah, that feels like fear, but guess what? It's also exhilaration. So you don't want to miss out on exhilaration. So it's important to start practicing bravery in order to have exhilarating experiences.
So by now, I think there are a number of people listening who are saying, I'd like more of that adventure in my life. I'd like to experience what you described when you were talking about awe. What advice would you offer people listening on how to bring more adventure to later life?
I was interested in people learning something new. So I looked at a swimmer and two swimmers, actually. And Diane Espadon in Southern California had a full life, but had always been really scared of swimming but had a big affinity to the ocean. So she decided she was going to learn to swim. And I actually was there when she was taking lessons. But she ended up not finishing her swimming lessons. And I thought initially that, oh, wow, then I'm just not going to write about that what a bummer. But in fact, what I saw and learned is that, no, I mean, she first of all learned a lot during the time she was trying to learn, but also that not every outdoor activity is for everybody. So then I found another swimmer, and the difference was is that she had brought a friend along to swim. And so when people come to me and say, how do I get outside? I suggest, well, first of all, saying yes to a friend who asks you to come with them, but also enlist a friend to come with you to experience whatever is new. And if it doesn't work for you, that doesn't mean it was a failure, because I know Diane got a lot out of that swimming journey that we went on. And more than that, she already had a full life and she was already doing other outdoor activities. So it wasn't right for her at that time. And so the other thing you can do is what Cynthia Hicks did is just use the internet. A lot of the women I met found what they did by going online and going on meetups. And I kind of thought, oh, the internet, that's not, no. Women of all ages at this later stage definitely still go online to find things.
And she mentioned to stick with it, that she went, as I recall, a few times, and it took a while to make the connections with some of the people there. She was coming into an existing group that took a while.
Yeah, Alona Aguayo said, hey, you know, the first time I went to that meetup, you know, nobody really talked to me. I kind of hiked on my own. It was like, huh, I thought maybe I should just hike on my own. This didn't seem worth it. But then she went again and she realized, no, you know, this is just takes time. You know, this is the way people operate. It's just kind of a slow move. And then now she has an incredible community of women that she hikes with.
Thank you so much for taking the time to make us smarter about the importance of outdoor adventure and the multiple benefits that it can convey. So thank you, Caroline.
Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate your question. Thank you.
Time for takeaways, ideas you can put into action following today's conversation with Caroline Paul. Number one, reframe how you're thinking about aging. I think it all starts there. And Caroline's point about having a positive view on aging is so essential and so achievable. If you're interested in learning more about that, you'll see a link in the show notes to the conversation with Becca Levy, whose research Caroline includes in her book, Tough Broad. So how are you thinking about getting older? And how could you turn it positive if it's not? Number two, how's your outdoor life? I think this is one of my headlines from this conversation is the benefits we get from spending time in nature. It doesn't have to be anything that is too dramatic. It can be simply, as she talked about, walking mindfully can make a big difference. So as the calendar turns to spring shortly, what do you want to do outside? What can you do to spend more time in the outdoors? Number three, choose your adventure. There's a long list of things that she mentioned and more in the book of different ways in which people, older women in her case, that she profiled are really embracing ongoing adventures, not one-time things or things they're doing outside. But I think she's made the idea of adventuring more accessible. And that's why I like where we started on this podcast, a quote from her about really, an adventure is something that you haven't done before. It's something new. And her points about novelty, the value of novelty, are so important. What can you do to try something new? And keep in mind the other benefits that she talked about that are so important, like community. They're often a side benefit from doing these things with others. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can see all of our episodes at our website, retirementwisdom.com. Along with book summaries, some of which you won't expect because they're not specifically about retirement, but they can be very useful in crafting a great life in retirement. Thanks for listening.